The Fifth Queen, and How She Came to Court by Ford Madox Ford. Part 1. The Coming. Magister Nicholas Udall, the Lady Mary's pedagogue, was very hungry and very cold. He stood undecided in the mud of a lane in the Austin Friars. The quickset hedges on either side were only waist high and did not shelter him. The little houses all round him of white daub with grey corner beams had been part of the old friars' stables and offices. All that neighborhood was a maze of dwellings and gardens, with the hedges dry, the orchard trees bare with frost, the arbors wintry and deserted. This congregation of small cottages was like a patch of common that squatters had taken. The great house of the Lord Privy Seal, who had pulled down the monastery to make room for it, was a central mass. Its gilded vanes were in the shape of men-at-arms, and tore the ragged clouds with the banners on their lances. Nicholas Udall looked at the roof and cursed the porter of it. "He could have given me a cup of Hippocras," he said, and muttered, as a man to whom Latin is more familiar than the vulgar tongue, "a hexameter about pocula plena." He had reached London before 9 in one of the king's barges that came from Greenwich to take musicians back that night at 4. He had breakfasted with the Lady Mary's women at 6 off warm small beer and fresh meat, but it was 11 already, and he had spent all his money upon good letters. He muttered, "Pauper sum pater fader quot didant faro," but it did not warm him. The magister had been put in the Lady Mary's household by the Lord Privy Seal, and he had a piece of news as to the lady's means of treasonable correspondence with the emperor her uncle. He had imagined that the news, which would hurt no one because it was imaginary, might be worth some crowns to him. But the Lord Privy Seal and all his secretaries had gone to Greenwich before it was light, and there was nothing there for the magister. "You might have known as much, a learned man," the porter had snarled at him. "Isn't the new queen at Rochester? Would our lord bide here? Didn't your magistership pass his barge on the river?" "Nay, it was still dark," the magister answered. The porter sniffed and slammed to the grating in the wicket. Being of the old faith, he hated those Lutherans, or those men of the new learning, that it pleased his master to employ. Udall hesitated before the closed door. He hesitated in the lane beyond the corner of the house. Perhaps there would be no barges at the steps, no king's barges. The men of the Earl Marshal's service, being papists, would pelt him with mud if he asked for a passage. Even the Protestant lord's men would jeer at him if he had no pence for them. And he had none. He would do best to wait for the musician's barge at 4. Then he must eat and shelter, and find a wench. He stood in the mud. Long, thin, brown in his doctor's gown of fur, with his black flapped cap that buttoned well under his chin and let out his brown, lean, shaven and humorous face like a woodpecker's peering out of a hole in a tree. The volumes beneath his arms were heavy. They poked out his gown on each side, and the bitter cold pinched his finger ends as if they had been caught in a door. The weight of the books pleased him, for there was much good letters there. A book of Tully's epistles for himself, and 2 volumes of Plautus comedies for the Lady Mary. But what among his day's purchases pleased him most was a medallion in silver he had bought in Cheapside. It showed on the one side Cupid in his sleep, and on the other Venus fondling a peacock. It was a heart-compelling gift to any wench or lady of degree. He puckered up his deprecatory and comical lips as he imagined that that medal would purchase him the right to sigh dolorously in front of whatever stomacher it finally adorned. He could pour out odes in the learned tongue, for the space of a week, a day, or an afternoon according to the rank, the kindness or the patience of the recipient. Something invisible and harsh touched his cheek. It might have been snow or hail. He turned his thin, cunning face to the clouds, and they threatened a downpour. They raced along like scarves of vapor, so low that you might have thought of touching them if you stood on tiptoe. If he went to Westminster Hall to find Judge Comers, he would get his belly well filled, but his back wet to the bone. At the corner of the next hedge was the wicket gate of Old Master Grocer Badge. There the magister would find at least a piece of bread, some salt and warmed mead. Judge Comer's wife was easy and bounteous, but old John Badge's daughter was a fair and dainty morsel. He licked his full lips, leered to one side, muttered, "A curse on all lords' porters," and made for John Badge's wicket. Badge's dwelling had been part of the monastery's curing house. It had some good rooms and 2 low stories, but the tall garden wall of the Lord Privy Seal had been built against its side windows. It had been done without word or warning. Suddenly workmen had pulled down old Badge's pigeon house, set it up 20 yards further in, marked out a line and set up this high wall that pressed so hard against the house end that there was barely room for a man to squeeze between. The wall ran for 1/2 mile, and had swallowed the ground of 20 small householders. But never a word of complaint had reached the ears of the Privy Seal other than through his spies. It was, however, old Badge's ceaseless grief. He had talked of it without interlude for 2 years. The Badge's room, their houseplace, was fair-sized, but so low-ceiled that it appeared long, dark and mysterious in the winter light. There was a tall press of dark wood with